We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, 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 and welcome to another episode of the RotoViz College Football Podcast. I am your host, Stefan Lacoe, joined by Jordan and Matt. Fellas, I was super excited getting ready for this week because I was looking at the games and I thought, yes, it's finally here. Matt versus Jordan. We've got Penn State versus Michigan. And then I realized, wait, Matt's not a Michigan fan. He just talks about Michigan all the time. And so my sales were deflated a little bit. But I legit thought for a moment that this was our rivalry week.
Okay, now we're fighting.
It was a aha moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's the second big week in a row for the hesitant homer that I am. I mean, it kind of feels like this is sort of a me versus Matt in a weird, like mental gymnastics type way, like a 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon. So, I mean, we'll work with it. We'll work with it.
Right.
I'm always okay to root against Penn State. I'm still rooting for them to win this week. I just want them to look bad winning.
We can do that for you.
Okay. Yeah. It is interesting, though, because, like, you're obviously an Ohio State fan, Matt, but you do talk about Michigan an awful lot. And it's just like it almost feels like little brother syndrome, except it's not, because you guys have crushed Michigan recently and continuously. So it's just one of those things, like the rivalry is so true that even when Michigan is down, you still like to stomp on them.
Well, and in fairness, all offseason, I heard that, Urban Meyer's out of the picture. That means it's Michigan's time. This is the year the streak breaks. This is the year that Michigan finally gets over it. No. And we'll get to that in a second, but no. And it's been a great year for me because they've looked so bad.
Yeah.
What a segue. What a segue right into the first section here.
Guys, I know. They keep me on this. You guys keep me here for a reason.
Yeah. I know. I no longer need to pretend to be a host. I can just, you know, mute my mic. You two could just talk, and then you could just let me know when you need me to edit it and publish it, and we're good to go. You didn't actually need to wait an hour and a half for me while I was running around doing things. You could have just started without me.
If you weren't here, I would run rampant and just rant all the time, and Jordan would be sitting there like trying to actually speak appropriately.
Yeah, well, you know, that's still kind of how it is, isn't it? No, but you brought up Michigan and you were talking about the off season, and it just made me think we're halfway through the season now already somehow, which is crazy. And I was just hearkening back to the day when we were yet to watch any college football this season, and we were thinking, what is going to happen this year? And we did a little segment of overrated and underrated. And I just wanted to kind of look back at it and see where we were right, where we were wrong, and where we maybe can change our perspective moving forward. So, Matt, since you already brought them up, one of your overrated teams going into the year was Michigan. You were pretty passionate about it, and you thought that you thought that this team's rank, I think the preseason rank was 7, and you thought it was way too high. So how do you feel about that take now? I mean, they've only lost one game.
I feel pretty good about that. I think my entire take on this one was that their defense, which was their strength last year, was going to be substantially hindered by the fact that they lost three pros out of their front 7, and both of their coaches who were in charge of their front seven, and that was their strength from last year. And then it was quickly shown to be true in the Army game when they couldn't stop Army at all. And I get that there's a little bit of the Service Academy trickery that you're just not used to, but then it was proven again when they just go into a fairly one-dimensional team, Wisconsin, and just got run off the field, literally. I'm a little bit surprised that Josh Gattis has found no success. I will say I've heard a few people mention it, but there's a tweet out there basically favorably comparing him to the beginning of the Moorhead transition at Penn State. But I don't know. I don't see it with this team. And I think until Shea Patterson's gone, they're going to struggle on offense. And truthfully, I think it's time for Tariq Black and Peoples Jones to be gone, because they feel like they're kind of hearkening back to the old ways of Jim Harbaugh. So I don't know. I think Michigan's going to be down for a little bit. They don't really have the talent to jump up, and their best players are 2 freshmen in Daxton Hill and Zach Charbonnet. And unfortunately for Charbonnet, it kind of seems like he's a relic at this point for what they quote unquote want to be doing. So
yeah,
I said unfortunately for them. Fortunately, I want them to be terrible.
Do you though? Isn't football better when rivalries are exciting and not just,
yeah, but the real rival, the game I'm actually afraid of every year is Penn State now.
Yeah. That is very fair. And Wisconsin too. I mean, they're no slouches. Jordan, let's head over to your overrated team for the year. It was Texas A&M. I think they were preseason ranked number 11. How do you feel about this take of yours?
Well, I feel like it's pretty much gone the way that I thought it would up to this point for Texas A&M. I mean, they won the 3 games that I assumed that they would win against Texas State, Lamar, and Arkansas, albeit they only won. They beat Arkansas by 4 points, which came nowhere near the spread. And they lost to Clemson, Auburn, and Alabama. And that's kind of the way that I anticipated going this far. And it was, like I said, I think the Texas A&M does have talent on their team, but it's just the schedule that they were staring at to start the season. And to tell you the truth, it doesn't really get that much easier. They go on the road against Ole Miss this week, which I believe they're favored by 6 or 5.5 points. I don't think that's an automatic win. I think Ole Miss is better than, you know, maybe we thought they would be going into the season. They have South Carolina, who, you know, we'll probably talk about what happened with them last week. And then they have Georgia and LSU to close out the schedule. So, I mean, it's been tough up to this point, and it really doesn't get much easier now that we're into conference play. So, I feel basically the same way now that I did then, and it's kind of gone the way I thought it would. And it wouldn't really surprise me if, you know, they beat UTSA, which they should do easily. They might split Ole Miss, Mississippi State, and then they probably lose to Georgia and LSU and South Carolina. Who knows? So, I mean, it's, you know, not to toot my own horn, but I feel like up to this point, I nailed this one pretty close to what we've seen.
Yeah, absolutely. No, horns should be tooted, my friend. Horns should be tooted.
I got to do it where I can, you know?
Absolutely. And we all, I think, I mean, one of mine was absolutely terrible for my picks for overrated, but the other one was Nebraska, which I feel like I was right on. They were preseason ranked 20th, which wasn't super high, but I mean, their only wins so far this year are against South Alabama, Northern Illinois, and Illinois and Northwestern. And all of those teams are pretty bad. They got crushed by Ohio State. They lost to Colorado. somehow, and then just got beat by Minnesota pretty handily. So definitely a disappointment for Nebraska as well. I think the defense isn't coming along, and Martinez just is a turnover machine, and that's going to be a problem when – I mean, it's always a problem, but especially if your defense isn't a shutdown defense. So, yeah, or just good in general, right? My other overrated was Oklahoma. I didn't think the defense was fixed. I was not a Jalen Hurts believer at all going into the year. I just, you know, I liked the story last year when he came into the game and kind of had that miracle comeback and kind of was able to redeem himself from the national championship the year before. But I didn't believe in him for a season long, leading an offense that we expected and I thought would need to be elite in order to offset the problems on defense. But man, I've been wrong on Oklahoma. They look really, really good. So that was definitely a bad take on my end. Let's go to your underrated, Jordan. You had a team that you're pretty sure wasn't getting enough love. How do you feel about Iowa State right now?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, they're sitting at 4-2, but their two losses were by a combined 3 points. Iowa and
muffed punt.
Yeah, against Iowa and Baylor, who, you know, Baylor's still undefeated. Iowa was, I'm not sure what they're ranked right now, but so still a top 25 team, regardless of what you might think of them. So, I mean, it's kind of a shame because if, you know, 3 points in two games it could easily swing the other way, and we could be looking at a 6-0 Iowa State. So, I mean, it's kind of making excuses because it does take talent and you have to win those type of close games. They're not just going to be given to you. And, you know, the truly great teams do find ways to win those real tight games. So I don't think Iowa State is necessarily up to that level, but I think we'll find out a lot more about them. They have Texas Tech this week. Tech's coming off a pretty brutal stretch of three games, and I think Iowa State probably wins that one on the road. Then they get Oklahoma State, then Oklahoma and Texas back-to-back weeks. That's brutal. But then they close out with Kansas and Kansas State, which are both more than winnable games. So, you know, as a team, I think a couple bounces go another way, and this could be a completely different conversation. And I think that Brock Purdy is as good as advertised, and I think that he's making a push to be in that conversation, that upper echelon conversation for the 2021 class of quarterbacks.
All right. Yeah, that's good. Matt, your underrated team was Northwestern. How do you feel that one's going, buddy?
So I made a mistake in thinking Hunter Johnson would be good and that Isaiah Bowser would improve. This team's not good. I don't know exactly what's wrong with them. I believe in Pat Fitzgerald as a coach. Something's off about Hunter Johnson, and I'm wondering now if a lot of these high school ranking sites would kind of just admit he was a miss by them, but I thought five-star talent getting brought into there, he would be the best thing about that offense. And I think he's still sub 50% completion percentage. And Bowser, who looked so dynamic against Ohio State, has not really been the same type of player. The offense is so bad. And when your offense is that bad, there's only so much your defense could do. I thought they'd actually still be like a fringe top 25 team. And that the biggest issue was that they were ranked fourth out of the Big Ten West. I'm just going to put this out there. If they finish fourth in the Big Ten West, I'm now considering this pick a success. But it's been they look awful, and they're going to continue to be awful, and they're going to lose by a lot this week.
Right. Yeah, I agree. My underrated team was Washington, and I think the jury's still out. But I know so far I've been disappointed in them. I expected better. I was hoping that this Washington-Oregon game would be against two undefeated teams. But if I would have had to guess which team wouldn't be, I would have said Oregon. I thought they'd lose to Auburn, and I thought they'd win out from there to this point. But I thought Washington would be able to take care of business in the Pac-12 and in their other games too, and it just hasn't worked out for them. So we are obviously going to talk about Washington-Oregon this upcoming weekend. We're going to talk about that on the show, of course. And I think, you know, if Washington can win that game and get on a roll and, you know, some favorable matchups down the way, maybe a couple good results, maybe they can, in fact, still win that Pac-12 championship. But it's a long shot at this point. And yeah, definitely don't feel great about that call anymore. I think maybe that preseason rank of 14 might be just accurate. They may not be any better than that. But yeah, I think we nailed I think we nailed our overrated teams. Underrated, I think, yeah, Jordan's was definitely real close, and ours were not as great.
Yeah.
But we have a good show for all you lovely listeners today. We're going to get into some Debbie talk. We're going to go over some risers and fallers. Again, being at the halfway point, just kind of seeing, just taking stock on some of the big names that have either climbed the boards or are plummeting, and maybe what we should do about that if there's a buying opportunity or a selling opportunity. Then we will go into our lock review, talk to you about our not-so-great week last week, get into the games for next week, and then, of course, we'll finish out the show with our locks of the week. It'll be, we're going to get better. Or this is a good week. How do you guys feel? Do you guys feel good about your locks? Do you guys have some pretty good feelings about this one? Or is this a slate of games that makes you nervous? How do you feel, Matt?
I actually like my picks. I feel pretty solid about them.
Yeah. Jordan?
Yeah, I mean, I'm. I don't
you
know.
Feel
I
great. Say that is the voice of confidence.
Yeah, I wouldn't say solid. I wouldn't say solid, but I feel like they're well reasoned. I'll put it that way. I feel like I have reason and logic to the picks. But the word lock is more and more becoming. It's grinding my gears a little bit because. There is no such thing.
Hunch of the week.
There we go.
Yeah, I like it. Great. Well, let's get into Debbie. Let's talk about some of these players. I asked you both, and I gave you tons of warning. I think I gave you like 2 hours before the show. I was like, hey, why don't we do this? But I wanted you guys to give me a riser and faller at both the wide receiver and running back position, since that's where most of the draft capital and energy is spent. In Debbie, and then just a bonus, which could be either up or down, and it could be a player at any position. So, Jordan, why don't you give me? Why don't we start with wide receivers for the risers? So we'll just bounce back between you and Matt. So, Jordan, give us your riser at the wide receiver position.
So I went with Rashad Bateman, wide receiver from Minnesota. He's obviously he had a really good freshman season, sharing the field with Tyler Johnson, who everyone in the Debbie community is pretty much well aware of at this point. Up till now this season, he leads the team in receiving yards. He's second in receptions and tied for second in receiving touchdowns. And in a lot of ways, I think you can say he's outplayed Tyler Johnson. He's been more explosive, more efficient, and he's just kind of continuing what he did last year. So, I mean, I think as a true sophomore, we still have another year to wait before he's eligible. But with Tyler Johnson likely moving on or out of eligibility, I should say, after this season, Bateman should step into an even larger role next year. And if we see, you know, the same kind of success on offense that Minnesota's had up to this point, I think that could be a fruitful situation. So he's a guy that, you know, we were aware of because of what he did last year. But there's been almost no drop-off whatsoever, and he's actually improved, in my opinion. So he's a guy that's been moving up my board personally.
Yeah, he's averaging over 22 yards per reception. He's got 4 touchdowns on the year. Yeah, pretty solid. Real quick question, not about him, but about Tyler Johnson. Is he – I know he's not on your list. So is he a faller for you, or is he just kind of a staying the same? Does the fact that Bateman's been out – producing him from a statistical category, does that frighten you at all? Or is it just a situation where you've got two really good options in Minnesota?
That's a good question. I think that Johnson may have fallen a spot or two in my overall rankings from the start of the season, but that isn't necessarily anything to do with him, more so with other people moving around in that same area. But no, I don't think Bateman excelling necessarily is a downgrade for Johnson. We know that he has elite age-adjusted production, and you know we're all hoping that he'll get the draft capital on the other side this spring. So, I mean, I think he's perfectly fine as a prospect, and I don't really see Bateman his production and his improvement necessarily being a detriment at all.
Yeah, and as the resident Tyler Johnson truther, I'll say he still has a 0.35 dominator for the year, and he's still over 33% market share yards. For any other player, we'd be looking at that as an amazing season. But because he had back-to-back 0.5 dominator seasons and two seasons over a 0.4 market share, it seems like he's regressing. But the truth is that Bateman's also just good, and he's still, they're just splitting this giant share, and they're the only ones getting thrown at.
Sure. And is Tanner Morgan, with both of these receivers balling out, is Tanner Morgan a quarterback that people should be interested in?
No.
Or no? He's only a sophomore.
I mean, his numbers up to this point are very strong this season.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a 14-3 touchdown interception ratio. He's thrown for almost 1,500 yards, which isn't a ton, but 195 rating, not terrible.
Really efficient. 12.3 adjusted yards per attempt is excellent. Small sample, 124 attempts. So, I mean, we probably need a bigger sample size to make a real fair judgment. But if we're basing it only on this season and what we've seen up to this point, he's been really good.
Yeah, cool. So it might be more that he's good enough to allow these elite receivers to produce. So, yeah, cool. Matt, how about you give us your wide receiver riser?
So I wrote about this guy in the preseason because he had a big opportunity open up, and that was Elijah Moore with Ole Miss. The team is not good. I'm not going to sugarcoat it, not going to sit here and say anything more about it, but he has, not only has he jumped into the role that A.J. Brown opened up, he is on his way to becoming a very strong Devy option. He's got a 38.5% market share so far this year in yards and a 0.41 dominator on his way to a breakout year. Only a true sophomore. The only thing that concerns me, he's not very big, but he was basically going very late. I think he was back half of most drafts in Devy drafts that I did over the summer, and he is, looks like a strong candidate now to be one of those good slot receivers that gets drafted and has value in the NFL.
Yeah, great question for you. Question for you on more, not necessarily specific to Elijah Moore, but more in general. The fact that the two wide receivers that were drafted from Ole Miss last year, my boy DK and AJ, not my boy, but DK certainly is, the fact that they're producing well and having good seasons as rookies in the NFL, coming from that same school, does that play into your evaluation of a jump that can be made, or is that kind of irrelevant? So basically I'm asking you, is this whole notion of, you know, wide receiver you or running back you, is that a real thing, or is that just narrative street?
No. It's narrative street. The only thing that I would take away from this, or from them being successful, is essentially that it's justification for why he only got a 10% share last year, because he was going up against AJ Brown. He was going up against DeMarcus Lodge, who's not successful, but he was another guy that was a draftable player. So I think that's my whole takeaway from that, is that it's easy to say that players should be breaking out as a true freshman, but when they're looking at two guys who are drafted on the first 2 days of the NFL draft, it makes a little bit of sense that this 5'9" wide receiver isn't getting the target volume that you would hope. And now with those guys out the door, he gets to step into the spotlight.
Yeah, that's really good. That's useful because, yeah, just because it's narrative street doesn't mean we can't get any useful information out of it. All right, Jordan, who's your faller?
Yeah, so for a wide receiver, I took Justin Shorter, wide receiver from Penn State, and this is
you're just such a tumultuous relationship you have with your alma mater, isn't it?
This is I give you that, but this is justified, I feel like, because Shorter came in two classes ago, I believe, and he was a five star, if not five star, a very high four star recruit.
He was the number one wide receiver.
Yeah, there we go. And that's really all you need to know. And especially in a year like this, where KJ Hamler is clearly their number one wide receiver, but he is, he's, he plays his role very well. But what they really could use is a long, bigger bodied outside X type receiver to complement KJ Hamler. And they have not found that. And Shorter appears, you know, by all accounts, looks perfectly built to play that role. And he just has not done it.
6'4", 235. Yeah, you'd think.
Talent, size, athleticism, pedigree, everything. And it just has not materialized. He has 8 catches, I think around 100 yards so far this season. So I don't know. I mean, I had high hopes when he was coming in. I thought he could be that next, like, Allen Robinson type for Penn State, that type of alpha to take over the passing game, and it just hasn't materialized. So, I mean, it's hard to write off entirely someone with that combination of those things we just talked about, but it's been an absolute disappointment for me, I'm sure for a lot of people. So I'm just kind of, until something changes, I'm just chalking this one up as a loss. I whiffed on that one.
It's hard to have high hopes for a guy named Shorter. Am I right?
Yep. Hey.
Sorry, you can. I'll delete that part of the podcast. Do you think is this a system problem or is this a personnel problem? Is this a him problem or a problem with the not getting? Because I see his stats here. I don't see his targets. I don't know if he's, we don't have a Matt Harmon doing reception perception on these guys. Is this a Sean Clifford problem or is this a Shorter problem?
That's a good question. I think that, like, we've talked briefly about Sean Clifford and some of the concerns I still have. And even after, they may even be more magnified after that Iowa game. I don't think it's a perfect situation. If Shorter was for some reason thrown into Alabama or LSU's offense, that situation, he would probably thrive. But for whatever reason, and it could be things that we don't even have access to. It could be internal personal reasons. All those things play a factor, play a role, and we don't have access to that information. So I can't say it's one thing or another. It's likely a combination of a lot of things, some known, probably some unknown. It's kind of tough to be able to nail it down specifically. It's just when he was coming in, the promise that he came in with and what I view as an open opportunity to fill a role that he's probably built for, and he hasn't done it. So, that's all I can really say.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think too, he is young. I think he'll be interesting to look at and see what happens moving forward, because I think his eligibility is still like first year. So, there's some time to see what changes. I was surprised to see your faller here, Matt. So why don't you tell us a little bit about this one?
So in full disclosure, my original faller I had written in there was also Justin Shorter, but I wanted to go with another one. So we did give you a little extra information. My faller is Colin Johnson. And the biggest reason for that is because I think he's the wide receiver 3 on his own team now. Duvernay, I'm going to pronounce that wrong and not feel that bad about it. Duvernay seems to have taken the leap as being the one. And then it sort of seems like in the absence of Colin Johnson, Ellinger has found other wide receivers, and potentially the more explosive one of those is Brennan Eagles, who was a 5-star receiver, in last year's class as well. I'm also a little bit concerned that, he's been so banged up this year. There's quite a few things that make a wide receiver prospect stand out as a positive, and I'm not really seeing any of those things from Colin Johnson. I'm going to quickly look something up before I make a dumb statement, but he hasn't exactly wowed me with his market share numbers the past few years. He's only at 11% right now. Seriously, I probably should have prepped this before I started doing this, but my bad. Essentially, he hasn't been this receiver that actually will stand out to me as anything special. Is he good? Sure. Is he going to make an impact for his college team? Yeah. But I think that he's hurting his draft stock this season, and he was one of the guys that was banking on being a highly drafted player. His best season last year, he was a 27% market share guy. And when you're looking at the guy who he lost volume to last year was Lil Jordan Humphrey. How's Lil Jordan Humphrey doing in the NFL right now? Where did he get drafted?
I think he has one target.
Yeah, he's not exactly making an impact, and he went undrafted for that matter. So when you lose out to volume to a guy that was an undrafted free agent, you're now losing out volume to a player that pretty much hadn't made an impact at all until this season. And you're going to probably have your worst season when you're heading into the draft. It's hard to say that your draft stock isn't falling, because he probably was a guy that would have been considered in the top three rounds of Devy drafts last year. And now I honestly probably wouldn't take him in a 4-round Devy draft. And in next year's rookie drafts, unless he has significant draft capital, I'm going to have a hard time taking him.
Yeah, and it's hard, like you said, it's hard to imagine that he will. I think he went 6 for 82 against Oklahoma this weekend, and that's half his production on the year. So, I mean, if he can keep, I mean, even that wouldn't be elite, but if he can, you know, build off of that and get a nice season going, maybe he can salvage it. But yeah, I think that's a good call. My reason for being surprised by it was just Colin Johnson was a guy I was excited about last year. I thought him and Humphrey were a great wide receiver tandem, and it looks like they both might just neither one of them might make it in the NFL. Let's move to the risers at running back. Let's speed this up a little bit, because we do have a lot to get to. As much as I would love to just sit and chat about this stuff, Jordan, your riser at running back.
Yeah, so I went with Chuba Hubbard, and he was obviously already pretty highly ranked going into the season. We all knew about him, but his production to this point,
because I screamed about.
Yeah, I mean, and Matt really leading the charge on this one. So I feel bad about stealing this, but not that bad. He already has over 1,000 yards rushing, 13 touchdowns. He's averaging 6.8 yards per carry, and really just the market share of the rushing workload for Oklahoma State is truly astounding. I mean, the second leading rusher on that team is Spencer Sanders, who's the quarterback. If you remove that yardage, the next leading rusher is LD Brown with 78 yards.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's truly incredible. Like the chunk that he's the role that he's playing is absolute workhorse. The only thing I will say is he only has 5 receptions so far, which is a little bit disappointing. But that could be a function of the offense more so than anything that he can control. Obviously, still very high on him. I think he's done nothing but improve his draft stock in particular, because he's, you know, the leading rusher in college football. The spotlight is starting to be shown on him. So, I mean, I think he's just doing all the right things. And yeah, it's pretty hard to ignore him at this point, even though we already probably felt he was a borderline, a low first round, high second round type startup Devy pick coming into the season. But I think he's done well to improve.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to just quickly do this with you because I feel obligated to. Cam Akers or Chuba Hubbard?
Ooh.
I know that's your favorite.
I'd probably go Hubbard, but it's close, because I think that the production just doesn't really tell the whole story with Akers. There's just so much context surrounding why he was poor for so long. And I think that if he's healthy next spring, I think he's going to be a star at the combine. So draft position, he could be drafted way higher than we maybe think right now. But I'll give Hubbard the slight lean there.
I'm shocked by that answer, but
are you really?
A little bit, because I'm slowing us down. I'll jump into mine. So I'm taking the next Chuba Hubbard, which is Max Borgie. I don't think he's going to be the workhorse that Hubbard is now in the same way. I think he's going to be a little bit more all around, but he basically has a similar rushing workload to what Damian Harris had last year. And he's turning into one of the better receiving running back prospects in the country. He has 27 receptions for the year in just 6 games, so 4.5 receptions per game, for averaging 10 yards per reception. As a runner, it's not like he's been bad. He's 58 rushes for 407 yards, so that's 7 yards per carry, and 5 touchdowns, so 7 touchdowns on the year. And hasn't been utilized in the return game. I actually would like to see him do that, because I think he'd be pretty effective, but he's such a big part of their offense. I'm fairly confident they just don't want to get him hurt. But Max Borgi is my guy for next year. He's one of the guys I'm targeting heavily, and I own several shares of in Devy Leagues. And for as much as I am concerned slightly about the rushing workload, the next closest runner, or the next closest in run rush attempts, is also his quarterback with 19. So they just don't run the ball, but I'm fine with that. He's going to be a very dynamic player. He could be turned into a Nyheim Hines type, or he could very well just be Giovanni Bernard and be amazing.
All right, there you go. And you've talked about him and written about him before. So you can definitely find more on Max if you're interested. Jordan, who is your faller at the running back position?
Yeah, this one's pretty simple. It's Spencer Brown, running back from UAB. He was a guy who had really, really strong age-adjusted rushing production as a true freshman. And he was pretty good last season as well as a runner. We always had concerns about him as a pass catcher. He's done little to alleviate those concerns this year, but what's more alarming is just he's fallen off a cliff as far as running is concerned. He has 79 carries. He's averaging 3.3 yards per carry. He's still the leading rusher on the team, but slightly. He's basically been outplayed by Lucius Stanley, his battery mate in the backfield, who's averaging close to 6 yards per carry on 38 carries. So this one is another one where I'm kind of just writing it off. Like I said, it was the reason I liked him was because he had such great production at a young age, but without that pass catching, it already seemed like it would be a bit of an uphill climb. Also out of the Power Five, playing at UAB. So it's not looking good for Spencer Brown finding his way to being a relevant fantasy option in the NFL at this point.
Oh yeah, that was going to be my question. I mean, is he even worth drafting? Like how many rounds would a Devy League need to be for you to even have interest in him, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's tough. I mean, at this point, like if you were doing like a four round, I don't think he's draftable at this point, which is unfortunate. Yeah. And it kind of hurts my heart because I really did have high hopes because he ran so well at such a young age. But, you know, that's not the only factor.
Right. How about you, Matt? Who's your follower at the position? This one, actually, I'm reading it. I see it in front of me and it hurts me because in the startup Devy League I did with Jordan this preseason, he's my boy, he's my running back, and it hurts my heart to see his name here.
So I picked Eno Benjamin, and I have to stop in with it and say, I don't think he's terrible. I don't think he's bad. I just think that his stock has taken a hit. Last season, he was a 1,600-yard rusher and had 263 receiving yards and was pretty efficient. He didn't quite hit my threshold of 6 yards per carry, but I kind of didn't care. He had 300 attempts and 16 touchdowns. He looked like he was on the verge of being a star, which is why if you did Devy League, Devy drafts this offseason, he was a first-round pick in basically every single league. He was probably one of the top five running backs taken. And this season, his rushing yardage has taken a pretty substantial hit. He's got 125 carries through six games. Great. I love seeing that he's still being used as a workhorse. Has seven touchdowns. Great. 19 receptions. Great. He's averaging 4.2 yards per carry on a team that's actually got a fairly respectable QB, so they have to respect the pass somewhat. I don't know why his efficiency has fallen off a cliff, and because of that, and particularly with the rise of guys that were behind him like J.K. Dobbins, like Chuba Hubbard, I'm just going to quickly look even more, like Trey Sermon, Keontae Ingram. I think all of these guys have a case to be moved ahead of Eno Benjamin because I don't think Benjamin's going to have this great draft capital unless he just crushes the combine. And I think he'll do well, but I don't think he's going to be this amazing athlete that will salvage some of the draft capitals of a guy like Cam Akers or of AJ Dillon. So,
yeah, no, it's fair. I think, yeah. The tide has risen and he has remained where he was before it did. and that's not ideal. You end up underwater when that happens. Who's your bonus pick, Jordan?
So again, picking on Penn State as I do, Ricky Slade. And this is a tough one because entering the season, indications were pretty clear that Penn State was planning on using basically a four-man rotation at running back. And a lot of people assumed that it would be Slade getting the nod initially. And it's kind of been a hot hand approach where Journey Brown has played a strong role. Yeah, he has a 100-yard game to his name this season. And obviously, in the most recent example, we have Noah Cain, who seems to be taking over the backfield at this point. I still think that they're going to rotate because they do have a lot of talent, and I think that it is beneficial in certain situations. Devin Ford, another true freshman who can chip in at times. So, I mean, it's a crowded backfield. It was a bit of an uphill climb, I think, for Slade to begin with, but he's been the least efficient runner of the four to this point. That could be situational and not entirely his fault. But with Noah Cain ascending now as a true freshman with so many years left of eligibility, unless something drastically changes, I think it's Cain's backfield to lose. And I think Slade becomes the second or third option in what will still probably be a rotation moving forward. But Cain has just played so well and it's just kind of pushed Slade to the side, and it doesn't help that he's been so inefficient. So he has to be bumped down, in my opinion.
Yeah. And Matt, your bonus.
So my bonus is Jordan's underrated player going into this year, which is Lynn Bowden. Not only did he have a really dominant last season, but this season, he's kind of proving that he can do anything. He can be incredibly dynamic in the offense. I don't think I sent it to you guys, but the funniest thing I saw from last week was in the CBS Sports app, like highlight score thing from the game, they picked players of the game, and the player of the game was Lynn Bowden. His stat line read 0 receptions for 0 yards and 0 touchdowns because he played quarterback. Don't know how to adjust when a wide receiver is lined up at quarterback, but he basically led them to a win by being such a dynamic athlete. So he's a guy that has proven that he can be a capable wide receiver, and he's proving the athleticism. I think at worst, he is going to go into the NFL and somebody's going to put him on their team as a kick returner. I think best case scenario, he turns into Randall Cobb and could be incredibly valuable to an offense. Early years, Randall Cobb, I mean.
Right, right. And he is with the Kentucky Wildcats. Yes. Good stuff, guys. Indeed. That's really good stuff. I think I'm looking forward to I'm already looking forward to the preseason where we can just like spend so much time on Devy and not have to talk about actual football games. I enjoy that too, of course, but it's really fun just hearing you guys go into some of these college players and take some time to evaluate not only what they're doing at the college level, but how that can translate to the NFL. Before we jump into our review of last week and move it forward, I want to take just a quick minute to tell you about ShipStation. If you're selling online, you know that getting your orders out can be a real pain. It's time consuming. It's expensive. There's so many options to choose from. It's hard to know if you're making the right decision. And that's why you need ShipStation.com. It's the fastest, easiest, and most affordable way to manage and ship your orders. ShipStation helps you get orders out quickly. It saves money on shipping costs, and it can keep your customers happy. No matter what you're selling, if it's Amazon, Etsy, or your own website, ShipStation brings all your orders into one simple interface, making them really easy to manage from any device, even your cell phone. It works with all the major carriers, including USPS, FedEx, UPS, and even Amazon Fulfillment. So you can compare and choose the best shipping solution for you and your customer. It's no wonder that ShipStation, saying that many times in a row can be a bit of a tongue twister. No wonder ShipStation is a number one choice of all online sellers. They'll ship more in less time with the best rates available. So right now, listeners of this podcast can try ShipStation for free for 60 days when you use the offer code BLUE. That's right. There's absolutely no risk. You can start your free trial without even entering your credit card information. Just visit ShipStation.com, click on the microphone at the top of the home page, and type in BLUE. That's BLUE, BLUE, as in the color. So that's ShipStation.com. Enter the code BLUE, and you can make ship happen. Boys, we did not make ship happen last week. We did mail it in. You could say that. We did mail it in. It was, we each had a losing record. We each went one win, two losses.
I got robbed.
If I wouldn't have wimped out and I would have stuck with my OU Texas under, I would have been a nice 2-2. But everyone I was listening to said over, you guys weren't feeling the under, so I wimped out. But I was, you know, it's a moral victory for me and also a moral failure for me that I didn't go for it. It's just rough. But yeah, some of the ones that we had, Matt, why don't you take us through yours quickly here? And yeah, and see what we can learn moving forward.
So I went back to my roots with games that aren't on TV with Georgia State and Coastal Carolina over 64.5. That game was not as high scoring as I was hoping. I went with Missouri and Ole Miss under 56.5. That one was higher scoring than I could have ever hoped for. My one win came from Wisconsin minus 10.5 at Michigan State, which was real fun because the day after we recorded, I heard all of my favorite other podcasters tell me, no, Michigan State's the play. So I got terrified on that one, but was happy to say that that was not even kind of a sweat. That was the easiest win I've had all season.
Yeah. Do you find that you get, when you stick in the Big Ten, that you seem to kind of have a better feel for it because you're watching so many of those games? Or is that not necessarily true?
Yes and no. I mean, I do. I think I have, if I were going to say the teams I have the best feel for, there's probably like 7 teams that I feel like I really know how games are going to go. And yeah, I think Michigan State is one of them.
Yeah.
So bet against Michigan State every week should be my new play.
Yeah, there you go. How about you, Jordan? How was your week? Walk us through it.
Not great. My lone win was Air Force minus 3 against Fresno State. That was a pretty easy cover. Memphis Temple, I went under 50.5. I missed on that one by a touchdown. They combined for 58 points. So that was a bad call on my part. But I will say the Texas Tech Baylor under 58. I'm a little bit miffed about that one, guys.
Shafted.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Like that ticket, you know, in reality doesn't cash. But you know what? That's a load of horse shit because that game was 20-20 right at the end of regulation. I was on the right side of that. I don't care what the final score was. But, you know, you take those because overtime is overtime and who knows how long it'll go. And, you know, sometimes teams just score 100 points in overtime. It's just the way it goes. College football.
Yeah, no, those overtime ones. I mean, if it goes into overtime, you better pray you had the over. You know, like that's just how it goes. Yeah.
Yeah, basically.
I also went 1-2. I got my Colorado Oregon under was spot on. I felt very smart. But man, I thought Colorado would show up and I thought plus 21 was a big enough number that they could keep it within that. And they did not. They just got rolled. It was embarrassing. It was fun around here because I got to wear my Ducks hat and walking around Boulder. You know, that's always fun, except that no one actually cares about college football right now. And then my other one was
they're too high.
Right. Virginia plus 1 against Miami. That did not work out. Miami was comfortably in the lead for that one for most of it. So not the best of weeks, but we will continue to improve. And I feel like it all starts this week. I'm feeling pretty good about it. Let's talk real quick about some of these games. I watched pretty much every snap of the OU Texas game, and I was really impressed again by Oklahoma's defense. I thought they looked really, really good. They were able to keep Texas to 27 points. That was a good showing. And at halftime, I mean, I don't remember what the score was at halftime, but it was pretty low scoring. And I already felt like I had I felt like a real loser for not actually saying I was doing the under on that one. But you can kind of
it was 10-3.
Yeah, you could kind of see what was happening. And yeah, it was a fun game though. Did you guys get a chance to watch much of it?
No, I was at a wedding last week.
Right.
I did not.
Did all the right people say yes or I do?
They did, and it was a super weird wedding.
Okay. Nice.
Goods, if you're listening to this, I still love you.
Yeah, I want to ask why, but we're already at the 49-minute mark, so I guess I don't care right now. What about some of these other games? What were some of the games from last week that really stood out to you, Matt?
LSU Florida went pretty much as I expected. I did think that LSU would eventually just overwhelm Florida with offense. And I'll have to say Florida's better than I gave them credit for. I think that this isn't a bad loss for them, but honestly, I think LSU is going to give everyone fits. If I were to tell you right now, as an Ohio State fan, the one team I'm really, really scared of, LSU is the one team I'm scared of. I'm not scared of Alabama. I'm not scared of Clemson. I'm not scared of Wisconsin or really anyone. LSU is the one team that scares me.
Is it because they have a former Buckeye at quarterback?
Who? I think the reason they scare me is because they've got two really good and one I'm still waiting to figure out on wide receivers, and their offense is now playing like it's 2019 all of a sudden. And they, I think Joe Burrow is going to be a first round pick. So yeah, I just think that in that game, Ohio State will have to score 50.
Yeah. Yeah. Jordan, what did you think of these games?
Just real quickly on the Penn State Iowa game. We all know that how bad that non touchdown call was. I still am very confused. I mean, I think that if you sit down any college football fan, regardless of their affiliation or affinity for a team, and you showed them that, 99 out of 100 would say that was absolutely the wrong call, 100%. And I think if that call is upheld, I don't think that this game is a 5-point margin. Penn State got the win on the road in a tough place to play, which is all that really matters, despite their offense looking pretty bad, especially in the first half. Noah Cain just kind of put the game on his back and salted it away. But, I mean, it's kind of embarrassing when you take, like, 3 minutes for a review and you get it that wrong. I mean, I don't know, man. It's just bad.
Yeah. Yeah, I unfortunately didn't get to watch much of that one or much of the LSU Florida game, but I did watch some of Notre Dame USC, and I thought USC played well enough to not embarrass themselves, obviously not getting the win, but I think at least Slovis could be interesting moving forward. We'll have to see what all takes place there. But let's move forward. Let's look ahead. Enough of this rear view stuff. Let's move into the future. Let's start with a game that none of us really care about all that much. Let's start with Oregon -2.5 at Washington. Looks like the line has changed. I thought it was at -3 before, but I guess it's shifting.
I think it's at both. Let me see. I'm looking.
Well, regardless, you're sticking with Washington, and I believe you are tempted to go money line here. Is this correct? If you were betting on this game, would you be willing?
I actually might go put some money down on this one. It won't be a huge wager, but I think Washington is the best offense that Oregon has played this season. Using at least going by yards per play, Oregon, while their defense has been amazing, they have played mostly pretty terrible offenses during this run. Nevada ranked 105th, Auburn ranked 48th, Stanford ranked 92nd, Cal ranked 115th, Colorado ranked 58th in yards per play. Washington ranks 32nd. So they're not in a great one, but I do think that at home in this spot, I just like Washington to play this game very close. And I think if they do cover it, they're going to win. And I just think this is where Washington plays spoiler and all of the Pac-12 dreams kind of fall to pieces.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to crush dreams.
It's your lot in life. Jordan, what are your thoughts on this one?
I think this is going to be a close game. And I like Oregon under the 3 at 2.5. I just think that the biggest advantage I think that they have is along the offensive line. I think that they can kind of muscle Washington in the trenches, and I think they'll be able to run the ball. But to be completely honest, I don't think that I would actually put any money on this game. It feels like it's kind of a coin flip, but I'll just lean on the team that I think can win along the inside on offense, and I think that they'll be able to run the ball. And just hope that we see good Justin Herbert. So I mean, I'll lay the points with Oregon, but it's a reluctant lean in this one.
Yeah, yep, I'm with you. I think if Oregon watches the tape from the Stanford Washington game, they will see the way to beat this team is exactly as you spelled it out for us, Jordan. It's running that ball, some of those short, quick passes, I think, can help too along the perimeter. I think you can't rely on Herbert to have a lot of time. And even if he does, I think the defensive backs for Washington are really good. So if Oregon's going to win, it's going to be running the ball. And I think Washington's going to want to run the ball too. So I do think it'll be a slower game. So I do think it will be close. I got to go with Oregon here. To be honest, I am also putting my – so this is where I'm a massive hypocrite. I think Oregon's going to win, and I'm going to put $10 on Washington because that way it's a win-win for me. Like, either Oregon wins and I'm happy, or at least I made some money. So I'm a terrible human being, but that's how I roll sometimes. So my official pick is Oregon, but I'm putting money on Washington. So I'm an idiot. But let's move on to the rivalry game here. We've got Jordan's Nittany Lions against Matt's Wolverines.
Fight me, Matt. Fight me.
You're going. The line's 8.5, and you think that's too much. You're on Michigan for this one. So why is that? Why do you think Michigan can keep it close, or do you think they can flat out win?
I don't think they can flat out win. I do think that Penn State will win this game, but I do think they'll win it close. Essentially, I just think this is going to be a low scoring game. Penn State's defense has been really, really good this year. Michigan's defense hasn't been that good, but they've had a pulse. So far in the games where Penn State has played defenses that have a pulse, they've struggled to score as well. They against Iowa, 17 points, and against Pitt, 17 points. The teams that they've kind of racked up points on, Idaho, not as an FCS team. Buffalo is a MAC team that's garbage. Maryland has been completely exposed, and Purdue sucks. I just think that this isn't the spot where Sean Clifford is going to go out there and throw for 300 yards. This is more of the spot where they're going to try and lean on the running game. And I think that Michigan will score just enough points to keep it close. S&P Plus has this line actually almost perfect. When you give a small home field edge to Penn State, I just think that, God, I hate doing this. Can I switch my pick? I hate picking Michigan, but I really think that that's the spot. I think if I was forced to pick a side, 8.5 is too many points, and I'm going to go vomit now.
I'm going to vomit at the fact that you just said a slight home field advantage, which in what might be the most difficult place environment to play in the entire country.
I think I've given them credit this year. I think I called the whiteout the best home field anywhere. I'm just saying that in S&P Plus, when they do that, they give a 2.5 point home field, 2.5 points to home field.
I hear you. You can't help yourself.
I went with it.
But okay. So I'm taking Penn State. I'm laying the points. It's a little bit iffy, because I agree with pretty much all that Matt said. I mean, I still do have questions about the offense, but I think that Michigan is kind of a fraud, even at what we may think of them at this point. And I think that in this environment, this type of situation, I think we could see Shea Patterson kind of wilt under the pressure and could turn the ball over a couple times, and it could sort of start to snowball if things go south. 8.5 is a lot, particularly because Penn State's offense hasn't been that great for extended stretches of time, but I'll lay the points here. I think that they're going to come up, find a way, and it could be a 10-point win. I think it's in that area, so it'll be close. But I'll lay the points.
I'm with you. I'm with you on this one, Jordan. We are teaming up against Matt this week, and that's okay. We had a couple more in the slate, but we're already at an hour, so I'm just going to do one more here. Let's do Florida after their big outing against LSU. LSU last week, coming up short. They get the upstart
South Carolina.
No, I know it's South Carolina, but I couldn't see who picked whom. But yeah, South Carolina coming off a huge upset over Georgia. We probably should have talked about that a little bit, because that was crazy and so much fun. It made me very happy. Hoping it's stupid that I have any hope for Oregon to make the playoff, but anytime a big team loses, I get excited. I shouldn't. There's no chance. But anyway, Florida against South Carolina. South Carolina coming off this huge win. What do you think takes place here, Jordan?
This is a tough handicap because I think that South Carolina probably does carry some of the momentum that they gained from that huge upset last week against Georgia. I don't think it's a fall flat spot or anything like that. But I think that Florida is the significantly better team from top to bottom. I'm a little bit worried about South Carolina's quarterback's health. I think he could be a little bit banged up, and if they have to go to their secondary option, I think that could play into Florida's hands. So I'm not doubting necessarily South Carolina, because I think this the push that they're going to get from that win last week is real, especially coming back home. Their fans will probably be energized more so than they typically have been under Muschamp. But I'll go with who I think the better team is from top to bottom, pretty much laying under a touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have great analysis of this game other than the fact that I just think that we watched South Carolina last week do everything in their power to try and lose that game to Georgia, but managed to pick up a win, mostly in spite of themselves. While I do like Helinski if he plays, I'm not going to say that I super trust a true freshman quarterback against a good Florida defense. And don't let the 42 points fool you that they gave up last week to LSU. That's actually a good performance against LSU. They held them about 18 points under their season average. It's a really good defense. South Carolina is going to struggle to score again. And I just think that I would be shocked if Florida wasn't able to manage 24 points.
My take on this game is pretty simple, and maybe it's too simplistic and completely false. But if we would erase last week from our minds and we didn't know that South Carolina had just beaten Georgia and we just saw the rest of work they'd done on the field this season, and same with Florida, if we didn't see the fact that they went out and lost against LSU, which again, not a bad loss by any means, but still, if we would have seen this line at 5.5, we would have been like, what? Are you kidding me? I'm taking that. So to me, 5.5 is not that big of a deal. I think Florida handles business fairly easily, honestly. And I think this sweep is one that we should feel very good about. And I think in talking about it and hearing you guys talk about it, I think I just added a fifth pick to my watch this week. I'm going to go ahead and put this one in there too. Florida -5.5. Lock it up, baby. I feel good about it. Don't you guys think, though, like if we didn't have last week, that this number would have been way different?
Yeah, it's overreaction. Overreaction, yeah. To a small sample. I'm 100% with you.
Now, I got to tell you guys, and I do mean guys, men out there, please listen. Overreaction takes place all the time. One of the things you should not overreact or underreact, but you should just have the proper reaction to, is erectile dysfunction. And it is not an easy subject. Usually we just brush it off, or we blame ourselves, saying something like, I just lost my mojo, or I'm sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling up for it. We come up with these excuses. But with Roman, it's easy to talk about. You can talk about it with a real doctor who can prescribe real medication. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for erectile dysfunction, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. The doctor will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you free with 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to getroman.com/bluewire and complete an online visit. ED used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. Just go to getroman.com/bluewire to get a free online visit and free 2-day shipping. That's getroman.com/bluewire for a free visit to get started. getroman.com/bluewire. Gentlemen, it can be difficult, but you are not alone. All right, let's go. Let's get it, guys. We have to improve. Matt, you are 14-8-2 on the year, so you're doing just fine. Jordan and I are stuck on 10 wins in our lock, so we have some ground to make up here. I already gave my first one. I'm doing Florida -5.5. I feel really, really good about that now. But Jordan, why don't you give us one of yours? What's one that you're feeling the most confident in?
Sure. So I'll start with Arizona State getting 13.5 at Utah. I know that Utah is, you know, they're riding pretty high right now, and I think that they are a good team. But Arizona State's tended to play tight games. 5 of their last 6 have been decided by 12 points or less, win or loss. And since Herm Edwards took over at the start of 2018, Arizona State is 8-3-0 against the spread as a dog, with 6 of those being outright wins. Jaden Daniels, freshman quarterback for Arizona State. I think he could struggle a bit on the road against a really good defense, but I think that Arizona State can do enough to keep it within the number. I don't necessarily think they will win outright, but I think that this number is just a little bit inflated. So I'll take 13.5 points with Arizona State.
I like that one. I like these Pac-12 games are fun. I think that's a solid pick right there. Matt, give us one of yours.
So I'm going to start off with my favorite one of the week, which is Ohio State -16.5 over Northwestern in the first half. Ohio State has led by at least 17 points in each game this season. Northwestern is averaging 3.8 yards per play, which ranks 127th, and they're going up against one of the top defenses in the country. Ohio State is, on the other hand, is averaging 7.1 yards per play, which ranks 5th in the country. And then to add, top it off, Ohio State's averaging 33.3 points per first half, while Northwestern is averaging only 5. Northwestern is not good on offense, and their only hope is really going to be to try and keep Ohio State off the field. I also think, just from a narrative perspective, Ohio State does not want to keep their starters on the field very long with Wisconsin waiting in the wings next week. I think the goal is going to be to try and get up by 28, 35, something pretty absurd so they can pull out Justin Fields. And the first snap of the second half will be Chris Chuganoff.
I'm getting nervous about those first half, second half totals, though. I just get nervous because, no, this wasn't a total, but just one half of football can be so wonky that, I get nervous about it. But I like your logic. I like your reasoning. The one I feel most confident about is my Oregon at Washington. I'm going with the under. The under is 51. Oregon, so far this year, the under has been the play. They have hit it, I think, all but one time this year. I was hoping the line would be a little bit higher so that I could have a little bit more confidence in it. But I do think both teams want to run the football. And as I mentioned last week, Oregon is not extremely efficient in doing so. They're efficient enough. But their defense is super, super strong. So I think no matter who wins, I think this is going to be a low-scoring affair. I think the number should be more like 48, in which case I probably would just avoid it. But over 50 points as a line at 51, I'm comfortable to place some money on the under, and I will do so. Jordan, give us another one, buddy.
Sure. I'm going to take the over in LSU and Mississippi State. Currently at 61 points. Tempted to even lay the 17.5 or 18 with LSU, despite them being on the road, despite them being in a look ahead spot with Auburn next on deck. I just think that LSU can, you know, if they want to, they can pretty much name their number. We've seen them just be an absolute juggernaut. We saw what they did last week against a really good Florida defense. Mississippi State's defense is not good. They've been susceptible to the big play. They rank 114th in the country in plays of 20 plus yards allowed. So I think that LSU will get their points. And I think that both teams probably will want to play up tempo. LSU has done so. I think Mississippi State would like to do the same. And I think, similar to what Matt said about Ohio State potentially resting some of their starters in the second half, if this game does get out of hand in the first half, we could see something similar with LSU. And I think Mississippi State could potentially score some points late to get us over this total. So I'll go over 61.
All right. Sounds good. Matthew.
My second one I will take is Syracuse Pitt under 52. Both teams are 4-2 on the under this year. And S&P Plus only has this game at 42. So I have a pretty big gap between the total and what the line is. So pretty happy about that. And once again, I'm going to come back to yards per play. It's one of my favorite stats for figuring out how good an offense is. Pitt is averaging 4.7 yards per play. That ranks 104th out of 130. Syracuse is averaging 4.6 yards per play, which ranks 109th. These are two bad offenses. This is Pat Narduzzi's special. He's going to try and just turn this into an ugly game where Pitt wins like 10-3, something stupid. I really like this one. I would say this one, I feel almost equally confident as the Ohio State first half.
Yeah, I also have a play on this game. I'm going Pitt -3. I think Pitt is just a much better team than Syracuse. They played Penn State pretty close. their first game of the year against Virginia wasn't so good, but other than that, they've looked really good. They beat UCF, as we all remember. They did follow that up with a tight one versus Delaware, which was unfortunate. But I think they're a better team than Syracuse. I think Syracuse has been very underwhelming. So just those 3 points does not frighten me at all. So Pitt -3 is another one of my locks this week. And yeah, feel good about it. I don't think I've ever placed a bet on Pitt. So, you know, first time for everything. And I'm excited for it. Which one of you got, Jordan? How about we hear another one of yours?
I'll close mine out. This one is a little bit risky, I'll admit, because the number is so low. But I was looking at Northwestern's team total under 10.5. Like I said, it's an absurdly low team total, I understand. But Northwestern has scored 10 or less points in 4 of their 5 games against Power 5 competition this year.
That's so sad.
Yeah, and we've talked about how bad we've talked a little bit about how bad Northwestern is on offense, but just some numbers to put it in perspective. They rank 127th in the country in yards per play, 126th in red zone conversion rate, 109th in third down conversion rate, and 124th or worse in plays of 10 plus, 20 plus, and 30 plus yards. So essentially, they're inefficient and they're not explosive. Which are the two things that you need to score points. And I think another area, Ohio State ranks 2nd in sack rate for defensive lines. Northwestern ranks 86th in sack rate for an offensive line. I think that they could just wreak havoc basically all game. I just honestly don't really know how Northwestern scores points here. It could be some weird freak thing. It's a Friday night at home. The grass is 16 inches high, yada, 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 all that. But I don't really know like how they get to double digits. I just can't really see it. Unless it's a scenario where Matt said if Ohio State's playing their 6th string in the 4th quarter, fluky touchdown, something like that. So there is risk, but this looks like a massive, massive mismatch. So I'll go under 10.5.
All right. I like it. That is, yeah, you always get nervous when it's, I mean, essentially just, yeah, a fluky touchdown away from getting it, you know. Although that might be, even if they get a fluky touchdown, that might be their only score of the game. So, yeah, no, definitely definitely a good call there. But I do see the risk involved in it. Now, you just added another one to the show docs. You've got a couple more, Matt. So let's hear one of yours here.
So both of these are S&P Plus plays, but I'll start with the actual picking aside, and that's Missouri -20.5 against Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt's genuinely terrible. They're 0-6 against the spread this year with an average of missing the line by 12.8 points. Missouri is 4-2 against the spread. Back to yards per play. Vandy is is averaging 5.0 yards per play, which ranks 94th in the country. And Missouri's averaging only 4.4 yards per play. That's 12th best. S&P Plus has this game at 24 with even giving a 2.5 home field advantage to Vandy. This line feels like it should be almost a touchdown higher to me. I just think that this one's going to be a blowout, and I think Missouri's going to handle Vanderbilt and not allow them to score.
Yeah, that's pretty straightforward. I've got a fun one for you boys. I'm going Nevada +21.5 at Utah State. So as you guys know, because we've talked about it a couple of times, I'm a big fan of Last Chance U, and one of the stars in quotation marks maybe of one of the seasons was Malik Henry, and he got his first career start last week, and it was a win. So he's going for his second start this week. And while I don't think Nevada will win, I do think that he will be able to have an effective game. The Utah State pass defense has struggled at times, and I think he'll connect with Elijah Cooks, the junior wide receiver, has already 4 touchdowns on the season. I think he'll add one or two. Again, I don't think Nevada has much of a chance to really even compete in this game, but over 3 touchdowns is too much for me. Nevada +21.5. I'm actually gonna to enjoy watching this one. I hope Malik Henry can come out and put a smile on my face by only losing by 19 points. What do you guys think about that?
You get to watch Jordan Love, which is the real joy of this.
That's true. But I love Malik Henry. So what can I say? It's gross. I know. Give us your other one, Matt.
So my last one is a pure S&P plus total play, and that's going over 42 in Rice and UTSA. S&P plus has this game at 53.6, and just quickly pulling up their numbers, Rice is 3-3 on overs this year. UTSA is actually substantially worse, but when you look at their numbers, 42 just looks like the number is absurdly low, as they've gone over that in all except for two games this year. They've gone over 42. That number just feels a little bit low to me. I think I needed a little bit of grossness on my slate anyway, so let's throw on two of the worst teams in the country.
There you go. My last one is more just I wanted a fun reason to watch this game, and it's Temple at SMU. SMU, as we all know, had that crazy game where they came back and were able to remain undefeated. Yeah, so they face off this week on ESPN. You'll want to watch it, and I definitely will. And I'm taking Temple plus 7.5. I thought this line would be a lot closer than it was. Both teams are having really good seasons. Temple is 5-1, and they have only given up more than 28 points once this year. Their defense has been pretty good. They just took care of Memphis last week. I think SMU will probably win the game, but I think it will be close. And that more than a touchdown line is enough for me to feel pretty good with taking Temple here. So I'm kind of relying on Temple's defense to kind of keep it close. And I just think SMU, that the magic will end sooner than later. I don't think they're going undefeated this year. I think Temple has a shot at actually just beating them on the field. If this was not in Dallas, then I think I might even go money line on this bad boy. But I feel pretty good with Temple plus 7.5. That's my last lock and the last lock, unless any of you guys have any final ones you want to sprinkle in there, of course.
No, I
Jordan, you can't go 500 when you only pick three games.
Yeah, that's true, but I'm gonna stick where I'm at. I feel like I'm pushing my luck as it is, so I'm gonna lay low on this one.
No, that's good.
I do want to say one thing about your Temple SMU pick. SMU is 6-0 against the number this year. Small sample size, but they've been really good in the passing game. They've got two pretty solid receivers in Reggie Roberson and James Proch. And then Temple has probably my new favorite sleeper that I'm keeping an eye on for next year's Devy drafts. Kind of an unknown coming into this year, but his name's Ramon Davis, freshman running back for Temple. Has been really good in the last two games. And while I think SMU will probably stifle him a little bit, he's definitely a player to watch for the rest of the year.
So who would you take in that one, Temple plus 7.5?
I think I would probably take Temple, even though SMU's been good all year. Temple's been making things ugly for a lot of teams this season, and I think they're just going to keep it close. I can't see them losing by more than a touchdown.
That's pretty much how I feel as well. Well, good, guys. We went way over, but it was worth it. I think having that Debbie discussion earlier was super valuable. And yeah, we're halfway through the season. Can you believe it? I mean, that is just nuts. I mean, we of course get to enjoy the playoff as well too. So not quite halfway there, but yeah, it's we're trucking along here. It's craziness. What are you most looking forward to over the weekend, Jordan?
Penn State win at home.
Yeah, well, yeah. Are you are you going to be watching it in any particular fashion? Any superstitions that need to be worked out before the game starts to ensure a victory?
No real superstitions. I'll be on my couch drinking beer. That's pretty much my superstition.
Yeah. How about you, Matt?
I'm looking forward to a Penn State close win. I'm obviously excited to watch Ohio State and Northwestern, but I do think that my favorite game of the weekend is this Washington Oregon game. I think it's going to be a battle of two potential first round quarterbacks, and we don't get a lot of those. So
yeah, I obviously am looking forward to that one. I am cautiously optimistic, but hey, like I said, I'm putting money down on the Huskies so that it can be a win-win for me. That's my trick to getting through these so they don't go through life depressed, angry, and alone. And on that note, we'll see you guys next week. Thanks so much for listening. I do want to quickly say, I sometimes forget to put this show on both the RotoViz main feed as well as our other feed. So do make sure you subscribe to the RotoViz College Football Podcast. We do have our own feed. You can find that anywhere podcasts can be found. So do subscribe to that in case I do forget to do that, which I will not, but I have in the past, so I might. So do subscribe, give us a rating and review. Be looking for us again next week when I get to rejoice in an Oregon Ducks victory that will ultimately lead to them missing out on the playoffs regardless. Thank you guys
so
much.
Oregon win by one.
Yeah, and Oregon winning by one. Exactly. Great. All right, guys. We'll talk to you guys next week.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m., and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.